This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to follow along on TV. And we're presented by EMP 180 Weight Loss Structure Accountability Results. The standard for weight loss in the area, emp180weightloss.com. Jason's on vacation this week. Three-man shows. I'm JP, joined by Johnny Cake Sawville and Eric Bickle. And joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline to give us a little more insight into this Capitals Lightning Series, Game 6 tonight, is Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, boys.
So, Greg, I don't know if you can put your finger on it. What turned after Game 2 that is totally... change this series?
Yeah, give us some answers. We need them here.
I mean, a week ago, we were riding high. We were starting to talk about possibly booking trips to Winnipeg or Vegas.
Yep. That talk is quieted, by the way, a lot.
Come on. You know it's those guys that had Nick Backstrom sign their broom. I think we all know that to be the case. They tried to burn the broom. It didn't matter.
Right.
The hockey gods were already angered. No, I think it had everything to do with John Cooper flipping around his lines and identifying what it was that was going on systematically that it was allowing the Capitals to get so many chances off the rush. And, you know, they still are. I mean, it's not as if the Caps have been completely locked down in these last three games. They're still getting their offensive chances, and their odd man rushes just not as plentiful and maybe not as dangerous as in the first few games. But his decision to move Palat up to the top line and move his pieces around the chessboard a little bit, kind of reinvigorated the lineup, set everything where it needed to be. And he's just been getting great performances, for the last few games, in particular from that fourth line, that Ryan Callahan line that played so well in Game 5.
Do other series swing like this, or is it just the Caps? You know, in round one, you know what I mean? Like, just the complete total psychological change with one game. I don't know. The other series, they go this way typically, or what?
I mean, not in this playoffs, courtesy of Vegas just being a buzzsaw through teams. But, it's not outlandish that a team wins the first, loses the next two, and then you get a best of three. It's just that it's not usually, this dramatic a swing where a team wins two on the road like this and loses two at home. And if you're asking me, like, why are we in this pickle right now? It's because, they had a chance to put the dagger in them in games 3 and 4 and didn't. I mean, that's the bottom line. And I remember asking Jay Beagle after game 3, are you a little reluctant here because you didn't put the dagger in them in game 3? And he's like, no one thought we were going to sweep this team. And then lo and behold, they don't do it in game 4. And now you've squandered everything you've done earlier in the series. So, If the Caps do end up losing this series, I think the opportunity that was blown here to get a win on home ice in 3 or 4 and really, really put the Lightning back on their heels is going to be what undid them.
Well, in fairness to them, I thought in game 4 they clearly had the better of the play. Just a couple stupid penalties did them in, and that's their own fault. So it wasn't like they laid down. But there were periods here where they have looked so nonchalant. And it's just almost like they're adopting the Wizards attitude, or we're almost too cool for school here. I just didn't see that sense of urgency consistently for 60 minutes of each game. That's what kills me. Now, I'm an unsophisticated fan, but that's what I see.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's inexplicable that their first period could be as bad as it was in Game 5. I mean, Barry Trotz was left wondering if the Caps knew what time the game started.
Right.
After the game to kind of try to figure it out. But again, what you said is the key takeaway heading into game 6, which is that if you look at stretches of game 4, if you look at the last two periods of game 5, you are talking about a team that has shown it can exert its will on this series and carry the play. And so what you're hoping, as we reach game 6 is that you get that same sort of effort. Maybe it's a bit more consistent. and that maybe you don't have a situation where Andrei Vasilevskiy is stopping everything thrown at him like the last time they played at home.
Greg, is shots on goal one of the most overrated stats in all of hockey? The Caps have outshot the Lightning 175-121 through five games, yet they trail 3-2.
I'll go plus minus or sometimes face off winning percentage, probably for most overrated stats, but it's up there. No, I think it comes down to shot quality, right? And as the series has gone on, the high danger chances for the Capitals have certainly been on the decline in some games. And I think that's the real issue there, is that you can pump as much rubber as you want on Andrei Vasilevskiy, but if the chances aren't of a high quality, that's another story. And then again, the other thing too is that, you can generate a lot of shots on goal when you're on the power play, which of course the Capitals didn't spend much time on in the previous game. So it's a situation where the offense that we saw in the first two games just isn't there for a number of reasons.
Joined by Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN, talking about game six tonight. What have you seen from Nicklas Backstrom? He hasn't seemed to have done much since he returned to the lineup.
Yeah, it's not been too impactful. I thought, as he's played more, he's gotten a bit sharper, but the results aren't there. I mean, when you saw him in the first period of Game Four, you're saying to yourself, "Uh-oh, why did they bring him back?" But ineffective, I think, would be the word. But there's a number of guys in that situation. I mean, it's not just Backstrom; it's obviously Burkowski who takes a seat because of his ineffectiveness. And a few guys through that lineup that have sort of been on the wane. But, it's just an unfortunate series of events. The fact that he was injured, the fact that it is, a hand injury. But like the Capitals kept on saying, I mean, when Backstrom said he was good to go, he's good to go. So he believed he was ready to come back and make an impact and hasn't quite yet.
Greg, I understand the refs swallowing their whistles the later we get into these series, but a huge no-call on the Orlov trip by Stamkos that put the Caps in a 2-0 hole in Game 5. I don't know if it would have completely changed the outcome of the game, but that was a huge no-call. How do they swallow their whistle on that play?
Well, because they're incompetent. I mean, like anyone who's watched the playoffs can tell you that they're incompetent. It's the officiating in this postseason has been atrocious. It's been absolutely atrocious. I don't know what the NHL can do about it. I don't know who answers for it. But the selectivity of these calls has been bad. The blown nature of the calls have been bad. The calls that got outright wrong have been bad. I mean, like that Oshie high stick from earlier in the playoffs. I mean, every series has had a few moments that fans are just kind of throwing their arms up in the air and saying, "What are these guys seeing?" And it's a really bad look for the NHL, and the Stamkos trip was just a part of that overall milieu of horrible officiating.
Just want to get into the what-if game for a second with you, Greg. If the Caps lose tonight, what happens with Coach Trotz?
He's gone, I think. One of the churning rumors in hockey world has been that Trotz would leave Washington to reunite with a guy named Paul Fenton, who was the assistant GM with the Nashville Predators, who, according to multiple reports last night, is going to become the new general manager of the Minnesota Wild. So Fenton and Trotz were together in Nashville. The owner over in Minnesota used to own the Predators when both Fenton and Trotz were there. It's a whole big sloppy kiss reunion. Now, they do have a coach named Bruce Boudreau currently, who probably does not like any of this news in Minnesota. But that's been the rumor for the last few months, is that Trotz would leave the Capitals. Obviously, doesn't have a contract next year. Reunite with Paul Fenton in Minnesota and kind of go from there. So that's the scuttlebutt. But as far as Trotz goes, I mean, who knows? I mean, it is tantalizing to think that you stay here and see this thing through. But at the same time, coaches have a finite shelf life, and he's been here for a few years.
Greg, is it good or bad for the NHL that the Vegas Golden Knights, an expansion team, make the Stanley Cup final? Where do you stand on that?
It makes me mental that anybody would think it's bad. Like, here's our sport that not a lot of people talk about, or as a hockey fan, not a lot of non-hockey fans talk to you about it. And now this thing happens where everybody's going to love it and pay attention to it. And, like, the person in your office who literally never talks to you about hockey because they don't know anything about hockey is going to come up to you and be like, yo, man, this Vegas thing, right? Like, how great is that? I don't understand how it could be bad for hockey. I know that there are some people who don't like the fact that the expansion draft was sort of made so friendly towards the Golden Knights. And I used to kind of feel the same way until I talked to this dude who used to be the communications director for the Atlanta Thrashers, RIP. And I was expecting him to say, yeah, if we had that draft, we'd still be around. But instead he said, you know what? It's not so much them fixing the draft for Vegas. It's them fixing the draft. Like, the idea that an expansion team should be abjectly horrible out of the gate is kind of something we've been trained to think, but it probably isn't the way things should go. Like, you should want them to be good straight away to build a fan base and to make an impact locally. Now, no one thought they'd play for a cup, right? But the fact that they're doing this in their first year is in no way an embarrassment for the league. It's an embarrassment for the GMs that made horrible decisions to help them build this team, but not for the league.
Hmm. All right, so Greg, let's get a prediction for tonight and in the series.
Oh, Jesus, come on. I mean, first of all, it's the Caps, so it could go, you know, if it's the Caps, so you feel as comfortable saying they're going to lose game six and become like the first team in history to win two on the road and then blow the series. But then you're also like, this is the Caps, so obviously if they're going to lose, it's going to be in a game seven. I'll say the Caps win. Why not? I mean, I think that they've played well enough in the last two games to give you some indication that they have one more win in them.
But that's
it's
it?
Very hard to close out a team.
Only see one
just
more
one?
Left?
Oh, let's not get greedy, boys, for God's sakes. I mean, let's just get back to Tampa before. And again, as much as I want to believe it's a different vibe and resiliency and we beat the Penguins and all that, it's still a game seven. Mm-hmm. And we all know about game sevens.
Yeah, I kind of like it that it's on the road, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one benefit is that they can't win them on home ice, so you'd like to have it on the road. You'd rather have it on Mars than in Cap 1 Arena, and there's no oxygen on Mars.
Yeah.
So, on the road is a little bit better, but it's still a game seven, and it's still the Caps.
All right, Greg, appreciate the insight as always. Greg Wyshynski.
Thank you, buddy.
You can check out his work at ESPN.com.
Yep. Well,
so he's got one more. They've got one more in him.
I'll take one.
You mustn't size to make
I understand
a pick.
That.
I mean, if you go back to his reaction, not size
he's almost,
to make a pick.
And it sounded like he's picking him just to zig while everyone zags.
Could be, yeah.
You know.
All right, a little bit later, Byron Kerr is going to join us. We'll talk about the Nats and all their injuries. He'll join us at 8:40. Tarik El-Bashir, who covers the Caps for NBC Sports Washington, will join us at 9 from Kettler Iceplex. Keep it here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. Little tidbit in the world of sports had me actually saying to myself something I thought I would never say.
Yep.
I kind of want to watch a CFL game.
Oh,
because
it's
Johnny Manziel.
I've never said that and will never say that.
I know Pete Medhurst is a big CFL fan. I'm intrigued by the Manziel story. I like to root for guys that are underdogs. He essentially is an underdog now.
Pete Medhurst,
the comeback story would be great.
I think he's the only guy in America that has an Edmonton Eskimos hoodie.
Yes.
He wears it around here at 106.7 The Fan when it gets a little bit chilly.
Now, Johnny Manziel apparently signed a 2-year deal. And from what I understand, there's no outs. Like, if he balls out in the NFL, if he balls out in the CFL, I don't think he can get out of the contract for 2 years.
I don't think it's a big issue. There was
probably
nobody,
not.
There was nobody
I don't
calling.
Think that, yeah, you
think
demand.
The NFL's going to be rushing to sign him?
I think he did the smart thing, though. I like it. The one thing I had a problem with And I think it's great. I like redemption stories. I root for Johnny. But your boy Colin Cowherd was like clubbing Tebow and said, "Oh, I'm so so much respect for Manziel playing the CFL. This is what Tebow should have done." Tebow's playing minor league baseball. You know, he said something to the effect of, like, it shows that he really wants it. Tebow's playing. There's nothing more sort of humiliating and, like, putting yourself out there than playing minor league baseball, riding buses.
True. But
so
I think,
don't give me that.
I think what he's speaking towards is Tebow's stubbornness, that if his dream was to be in the NFL, he was so stubborn that he wouldn't try other things. Like, I thought Tim Tebow would have been great if he tried another position. He just wouldn't
do it. But he didn't want to do it. But it wasn't like he was above it. He didn't want to play another position. He wanted to play quarterback, and if he didn't want him, he was going to go try something else.
Colin Cowherd is a jackass.
He's playing minor league.
Why you would take him seriously?
I don't. But, I mean, sometimes he has good opinions. But that one, I thought, was like out of left field. I'm like, dude, he's playing minor league baseball. He's riding around in obscurity. Every once in a while, they'll write something horrible about him, you know, when he strikes out four times in a game or something. And if he happens to hit a bomb on, like, you know, opening day, he'll get a little run. But generally speaking, he's playing minor league baseball in obscurity. How could you be critical of
that? Well, I think he's
that?
Just talking in specifically about his NFL dream. That if he was chasing the NFL, he wouldn't be messing with baseball. If he was chasing the NFL, he maybe would have taken other steps, like try other positions or play in the CFL.
Well, he showed
or whatever.
That's not what he wanted
to
do.
He just wanted to be a quarterback, and the league eventually said, not interested in you as a quarterback.
And that's fair on both sides.
Right.
So why, I mean, you know, it's fair. He didn't want to play another position.
But I am pulling for Johnny Manziel for whatever reason. Like, it's not I mean, maybe it is. Pete can jump in and correct us from wrong. I've never seen the CFL really be available to watch it on a regular
basis.
Well, I think
it's on ESPN2 or something. Maybe. I don't know.
I feel like
ESPN,
it is.
The Ocho. I don't know.
Right.
I feel like some of those games are. Maybe it's just the playoffs.
No, they're on all the time. Yeah. ESPN2 carries at least the Friday night game more often than not. The good thing for Manziel, he's going to a team that has just been rotten, rotten, rotten. The bad thing is they're being coached by June Jones, who's almost 70 years old. So,
He has to battle for a starting position, right? I saw
the
name I wasn't
Zach Collaros has been their quarterback the last couple of years, and he hasn't been great. The team's been terrible, so he's got a great chance. Not to mention, I think you know, even in a place like Hamilton, a bit of obscurity, it's probably going to draw a few more people out just to see if he can come play, which is good for their pockets up there.
He's a Hamilton Tiger Cat?
Hamilton Tiger Cat in the Eastern Conference, which has been so bad. In fact, 2 years ago, the Ottawa Red Blacks finished below 500 in the regular season and eventually did win.
Pedro knows more about the CFL than anybody else in the United States. It's not even close.
I don't know about that. I'm sure there are other great fans out there.
Not that many. I mean, it's a CFL.
But JP's right. Johnny Manziel brings interest, at least, you know, to the casual observer. And I was certainly, if I knew Johnny was on, I'd watch. Now, you have to tell me, because I don't know how else I would know.
I think he's got a shot if he stays clean, and I don't know if that will continue. I was a little worried about that.
I usually bet against drug
addicts. That little hospital visit that he had, they put it on prescriptions, like a bad prescription. I don't 100% trust that.
I bet against drug addicts and alcoholics. It's almost impossible to get over that. But I will root for him. 100% I root for him.
I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
When do they even play the CFL, Pete?
Did you keep mind like Pete's brain again?
Is it summer? Is it fall?
Training camps are getting ready to commence north of the border, and the season should start, I believe, in June.
Summer months.
Hey, JP, and Google is your friend, pal.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but you're like Google for us.
JP didn't even know when the Caps game started on Saturday night. You think he knows about the CFL?
Neither did the Caps.
First game starts June the 14th, and the Tiger Cats' first game will be, oh, boy, Johnny, tough debut. June 16th against the always very tough Calgary Stampeders.
Well, who would know?
Stampeders are probably going to be a 20-point favorite in that game and win by
Who are the studs on the Stampede? Can you name two?
Levi Mitchell is a guy that I actually called a game. His first ever college game at SMU was at Navy in a monsoon where we beat him 42-0. Ricky Dobbs ran 42 times, 200 yards for touchdowns for the Mids.
Yeah, that's good, man.
Well, look, the CFL is on because I swear to God, in the last month or two, I've seen some of the programming they've had on ESPN. Not only have they had esports is blowing up.
Right.
So I don't know if this was on ESPN. It might have been a different channel. I'm flipping through it, and there were guys playing Street Fighter, which is a game from back in the day.
I used to love that game.
So Street Fighter had a whole hour on TV. So I clicked on it. I was like, this is unbelievable. They're showing Street Fighter.
You know what those guys would do to me in Street Fighter? All I do would just randomly hit buttons. They would wipe me out in 3 seconds.
But they actually were showing bags.
Cornhole?
Yes.
What's next?
I couldn't believe
beer
it.
Beer pong? Val like, Diesel tune in.
This is
so
what...
The show, that was the entire episode? Was
it was a like
competition
a championship.
Of bags.
Well, I mean, they showed darts.
Was it us?
We've gotten used to that. Darts is on TV.
Was it me and
Val Diesel
out in front of the Xfinity before Maryland takes on like Purdue?
I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is what it's come down to on ESPN. So CFL is an actual sport.
You think they're not desperate for programming? I mean, there's way too many channels.
I can't even call bags a sport. Any pursuit where you can have a beer in your hand while you're playing and there's barbecue going on in the background. Sorry, it's not a sport.
Did they take a timeout to see if their chicken was ready on the grill?
Right. Look, poker, not a sport, but I am glad they televised
it.
Well,
let me tell you
something.
I saw some of the worst poker ever this weekend. You've probably seen it before. Like Poker Live. Poker Night Live. It's on Friday night.
Oh, I think it's on CBS Sports Network.
CBS Sports Network. Yeah. Okay, so they're 10 years late to the poker party.
But that's fine. Hey, we got a great idea. We're going to televise poker.
But
what?
No, but they're doing it. Here's the hook. They're actually doing it live.
Right.
Okay.
And that couldn't be slower.
Well, and the thing is,
are you not seeing the whole cards?
No, you can see all that.
Oh, okay.
They could do all that. They've got that production down. The problem is they're putting like celebrities on with poker players, and they're D-list celebrities because you can't recognize them. Turns out this one guy wouldn't stop talking. He was so annoying, and it turns out he's from one of the Real Housewives shows, and he wouldn't shut up, and you can't focus on the poker.
Well, he can't be a star. It's about the housewives. He's not a wife.
His last name is Sandoval. I've never heard of him.
Pablo?
It wasn't Pablo.
The panda?
I think his name might be Tom. And I had to Google him. And
it's a Vanderpump guy.
It's a Vanderpump. See, JP knows.
JP's the king of bad TV, by the way.
I Google him. I say, who's this guy?
I guarantee Drab loves him.
He was talking about his series and how they were in like 106 countries and all this. And I'm like, you're a reality TV doc.
Right.
What are you? He's not like an actor.
Huh? He's butt famous.
I've never seen him before.
Tom Sandoval.
Wouldn't shut up. But annoying. And then the other people were so nondescript, I couldn't tell if they were poker losers or they were D-list celebrities.
Or Hollywood losers.
That was your big Friday night.
I don't. Why? You have big Friday nights?
I haven't had
a big Friday night in 20 years.
Like Friday night watching the CBS Sports Network.
Well, I think my guess is that was a late night thing. My guess is that was on like at 11. I mean, are you still doing it?
Trust me, I've
11
seen it. It's bad. I didn't see that episode.
Oh,
I've seen
worst.
Other episodes. And I love watching poker on TV because I'm a loser.
Well, who's doing
and it? It's bad.
Somebody's doing a high stakes poker version that's pretty good. I can't remember what
NBC
network.
Sports, I think.
They're doing a new one, you know, a newer-ish of high
stakes. Yeah, it's a cash game.
Yeah, with the stars we know.
Yeah, they're doing silly straddles.
And it's awesome.
Phil Ivey played
in it. Live with the guys from Vanderpump Rules.
It's the worst dogs
ever.
This is why the Caps need to win for us.
Desperately.
Because if the Caps don't win, we have the Nats who are floundering right around 500. Everybody on the team's hurt.
Right.
They can't. The guys who are actually playing, you know, the Bryce Harpers of the world, they're hitting 220. We can't dip into this area right now. We know that
early.
We're going to get it in June
but
and July.
Some of the listeners love it when there's a sports drought. And
we
talk about just anything but sports.
I mean, big news over the weekend, former Junkies producer Adam Wise did win a golf tournament over the weekend.
That was big news. Isn't the tournament still going on? Valdez, golf expert, chime in.
I think it's over.
Oh, it's done now.
I just know that they're still playing at 8:30 at night, and I turned it off.
Adam Wise was the former executive producer of the TV show.
But the guy who won is Aaron Wise.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Different guy named Wise.
Yeah. Close enough. Wasn't Mike Wise.
No, it wasn't Mike Wise either.
Although I would probably pay money to see Mike Wise play golf. I can only imagine.
By the way, I have played a couple more games of Fortnite.
You have?
Yeah,
because
my kids play all the time, so I feel like I should try every once in a while.
Yeah.
I still haven't had a kill. I suck.
I know not to play because I know I'm
Have you
terrible.
Had one kill?
No. Of course not.
I'm okay at kind of running around and not being killed for a while.
Yeah.
Finishing like top 30, I feel
you
respectable out of 100.
You hide. Well, that's just like the cowardly thing.
I just don't run into anybody.
If you're a camper, I mean, what are you doing? If you're just camping and waiting,
Well, for a while,
it's very cowardly.
I got in one little hut or something, and I was like, well, I'll just have my gun and just wait.
No, I'd
but
rather,
then they can sneak up behind you.
I'd rather
and snipe
not play.
You.
Yeah. I don't know. I was watching my kid play the other day.
It's a phenomenon. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's great. They do it all the time. And I said, you know, I started asking these questions about Fortnite, and he's like, Dad, I'm actually playing Destiny right now. I couldn't even tell the difference. They look the same to me. But Danny, of course, hates Fortnite and everything it represents.
Because it's become so popular?
I think it's that, and it's also because it's social. And my understanding
he
don't
have to be social.
My understanding is Danny likes to just play these games by himself, like in the basement, and you know, no interaction.
It's like I can
him
respect
the world. Yeah, you know, it's the way we grew up.
I respect you being a hermit.
He doesn't.
I respect
he doesn't like the kids yelling and screaming and cursing.
Well, I don't like
that
either.
I mean, the part I don't understand, and it's just maybe my personality, is that people will spend money for the dances just so they can taunt somebody after they kill you.
Yeah, right. Well, you're a cheapskate. You can't understand anything like that.
I've actually paid for some of that for my son to play.
Right,
but
well,
it just
good.
Makes no sense. Like in the game, like what do you really get out of that?
I don't know.
And then there's actually that pre-part of the game. Have you watched it or paid attention? So before the game actually starts and you get on the balloon or whatever that drops you off, there's like 15 seconds where you can just roam around and do whatever you want. You can just shoot. You can dance. And like people will just sit there like dancing, doing their stupid loser dance.
It's like a free play.
You know you're probably the oldest guy to play Fortnite.
I'm not, actually.
you're definitely in the higher reaches.
Oh, you're in the top 1%.
Yeah,
I played
there.
15 minutes.
Yeah.
I told you, I played one game and got joned on. I got cyberbullied.
Yeah, right. All my kids play it. My son's more than my daughter.
Right.
I just prefer, like, if I'm going to watch it, I watch somebody who knows what they're doing. I would rather do that than go in and just get killed in 3 seconds.
I don't
and
enjoy
camp
watching
out.
It because I don't understand it. So I just let him
Well, it's
it.
Kill or be killed. That's simple.
Yeah.
And I guess you can build things.
I don't understand all the. I don't even know what he's doing. I can't even follow it. So I just let him play. I just go downstairs. What am I going to do? Sit there and watch him play a video game all day? There's no chance.
No, you watch Pablo Sandoval check raise.
Tom Sandoval. Whatever. And then I watch about 10 minutes of that. It was the worst poker production in history.
By the way, I should pull the strings with NBC Sports Washington to see if I can get a free roll in their Heads Up tournament. That would be silly if I could do that.
You think you're going to put you in the big silly with Phil Hellmuth?
No,
and
I don't think they're going to. But
Mattisau.
It doesn't hurt.
He's always angling.
It doesn't hurt the grass.
If he got his way under that, then I think I might be jealous. That would be cool.
Bazillion.
That would be the first thing I'd be jealous of.
Now, where do they play that?
I don't know.
Where do they play it? They probably play it in Vegas.
Playing in Vegas like one of the big sillies.
Yeah.
I need to
but
work
I mean,
on
it's
that.
It's literally the biggest poker players in the world, and like, you know, like Jerry Buss.
No, but I can
if
use
he was still alive.
EB, I can use
you know?
My.
And you think Cakes is going to play?
No, listen, Rick, you're missing the point. I can use my D minus list celebrity status to weasel my way
I
into
know,
the field.
But it's so low of a status.
I know.
Not, yeah,
I'm well
too
aware
low.
Of that.
Yeah, it's too low. They're going to put Tom Sandoval in 100 times in 100 over
Somebody can dream, but a person can dream, right?
Yeah, I like it. You would literally be the worst person they ever had in the tournament.
Absolutely.
Because it's
and I would
like,
wear that with a badge of honor.
And they would just write Cakes.
Yes.
Well, can you imagine the number
some notoriety.
Can you imagine the number of patches he has on his hat and shirt?
Oh, so many.
Complete yeah.
Of course, I have my MGM National Harbor hat. Then I'd have a hoodie. And I'd have stuff up and down each sleeve. Of course I
yeah,
would.
You have a Thompson Creek on one side.
I'd have a Pacers in a very high-profile spot. Of course.
Because Kate couldn't say no to anybody.
Yeah, Farish tattooed right under his eyes.
Yeah, right.
Right on his bags.
I would do that.
All right, coming up next, we'll talk about the Nats. They were swept over the weekend by the Dodgers. Lost a couple more guys to injuries. Byron Kerr will join us. He covers the Nats for Masson next on The Fan. Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan, live on NBC Sports Washington. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we'll get back into Caps Lightning Game 6. We'll head out to Kettler Iceplex. Tariq El-Bashir, Capitals reporter, will join us. But joining us right now is our pal Byron Kerr. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. He covers the Nationals for Masson Sports. And over the weekend, he broke the story on Juan Soto. Tell us about the 19-year-old that's now part of the team, really after just a slew of more injuries.
Yeah, how'd you get that scoop there, BK?
Thanks, guys. Yeah, that was pretty cool this weekend. I mean, this kid is a slugger, prototypical corner outfielder, is great at hitting opposite field. Mike Rizzo has talked about his strike zone work, at how well he can see the strike zone, how he spits on pitches. For a 19-year-old, chronologically, he's way above everybody else as far as that goes. And just a really smart kid, too. He's got the prototypical body, about 6'1", 6'2", 190. He looks the part. He's got the wide stance, if you've seen him on video, if you watched the pinch hit yesterday. He makes good contact and does a real nice job in his approach and preparation. Rizzo says that 19-year-olds normally go up when they're free swingers like that and hit home runs. You know, they go for, you know, a lot of bad pitches. He doesn't. Obviously, Eric Vidal got him on a changeup yesterday. But if you watch that at bat, one of the fastballs that Vidal threw to him about 92, he was so close to rocking it. So it's going to be fun to watch him. And you just have to remind yourself, just like when Bryce Harper came up, that the kid is only 19 and he's here. So it's going to be amazing to see his progress here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, but how far ahead of schedule is all this, right? It seems like just a few weeks ago, like I was like in single A, and I know injuries are a big reason why he's here, but he's performed out of his mind. But not that many guys can make this jump. Why do they think he can? Or is this really just sort of a temporary thing? They need him because they're so banged up?
I mean, I think it's a combination of that. Circumstances was the word that Mike Rizzo used yesterday. Talking about the fact that, you know, Rafael Bautista went down Friday. He was likely the guy that would have been selected here if Howie Kendrick injury occurred, and it did. But they lost two outfielders in a matter of 20 hours to season-ending injuries. And you have Juan Soto, who's doing such a nice job and has done, you know, only played 8 games at Double-A, obviously. So it is early for him to be up here, but it's the circumstances of the situations. Kind of everything kind of happened at the same time for them. And as I wrote this morning on MassandSports.com, they desperately need to get some production from the outfield. Michael A. Taylor is not hitting for power, not hitting at all right now, as he usually does, about 180 or so. And even Bryce Harper is down the last 15 games, you know, with not getting the walks he normally gets, not getting the contact. So they need some production, and that's what Howie Kendrick provided from that spot. He was the most consistent hitter for him for 2 months. Now, I'm not saying that Juan Soto is going to come in and be that guy, but they desperately need someone with a power stroke that could maybe change some games for them. And Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo said he's going to play, and he's going to play against right-handers. They have two left-handers coming up against the San Diego Padres these first two games, but I think even Davey Martinez admitted in the postgame yesterday that they are going to try to start him against one of these left-handers at least, because they just want to see, you know, what he can do, and they just necessarily need a bat out there.
Your phone is breaking up. Hopefully, we'll just see if we can hang in there one more question, see if it gets better. But, God, I'm so distracted by the phone. I've now forgotten my question. Here it is. So I mentioned this earlier to the boys. The Nats and Rizzo in particular, they make a lot of roster moves throughout the season, right? There's a lot of juggling, right, between the bottom two or three guys and the AAA guys. This year, though, because of the injuries, it seems like more than ever at this point. I can't remember this many guys. How many guys have been on the Major League roster so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a ton. I mean, I wrote that today about the injuries and how they've lost 336 combined man caves here in the first 2 months. I mean, you know, let's talk about that in hockey and other sports, but it has been unprecedented the amount of guys they have lost. And Brian Goodwin has not come back fast enough from the wrist, so he's still out. Obviously, they don't have Adam Eaton, so that's two starting outfielders that they would have had possibly if you consider Goodwin that. And, you know, it's been a ton of guys. It's been pitchers, it's been infielders, it's been outfielders, it's been even the catcher. You know, I saw a tweet last night, you know, everything. Yeah, the whole lineup. So, I don't have the exact stats on if it's unprecedented for the Nats, but it is unfortunately becoming a theme for this team. And even though they're above 500, it's something that is starting to really test their depth. And obviously they have a lot of depth in their system. And fortunately they have a lot of depth at the outfield position, which has helped them. So maybe they'll be able to get through it. But the fact that they have not been able to get Daniel Murphy back, and the fact that Adam Eaton got injured early, those are two big ones. And then you obviously have Ryan Zimmerman, who, you know, is normally a starter and a leader, who has had the injuries. And he's had an injury issue as well his whole career, or at least the last 5 years. So maybe you can't guarantee that he's going to play as much. They were going to platoon him anyway. But that's a lot of offense. If you know, you look back to April of 2017, 170 runs, 43 homers, 166 RBIs. This year in April, 27 homers, 104 RBI, 111 runs. Mm. Their batting average in April, 237 this year. Last year was 295. So wow. Obviously the production of the offense is way, way down than what they're normally used to. Now, the good news is the next nine games are against bottom feeders, and maybe that will help them with the Padres coming in, going to Miami, going to Baltimore. And they can try to kind of tread water, as I've said, here for the next couple of weeks.
Byron, you mentioned, though, Daniel Murphy. And to me, that's the biggest one because I understand he's not an outfielder. But you look at the batting averages. You mentioned Michael Taylor, 181. Harper's down to 224. Anthony Rendon's hitting 247. And Daniel Murphy, he is, to me, the best overall hitter on this team. My impression was he was going to be back in short order because there was even talk in spring training, well, he's probably not going to be ready for the opener. But I thought maybe he'd be ready a couple weeks later. What is going on with him? Is he playing? Is he taking at-bats? What do we expect from Daniel Murphy?
The good news last week in April was that he was rounding first base and running hard to first base as he was trying to rehab. It's all about the running right now. The hitting is fine. He can even go laterally with the fielding, but the running was still causing him a little bit of pain in the knee about 2 weeks ago. So in Arizona, about a week and a half ago, Mark Zuckerman penned that he noticed that he was running better. They put him back into Florida at West Palm. Davey Martinez told us that this week he expects him to get into rehab games and not just against simulated games against guys who are down there rehabbing anyway. But we still haven't seen it yet. We still haven't seen him go to a minor league affiliate and make that move. So hoping that that will happen soon. But the other thing that scares me about this knee is that, you know, the age we're getting to for Daniel Murphy, and you worry about these situations becoming, you know, chronic with the knee. You have microfracture surgery is not a small task to try to recover from. So the fact that he was uncomfortable running just 2 weeks ago was the red flag that scares me a little bit. But the fact that he's starting to make a little bit of progress here in the last week as far as running, it's all about being pain-free when he runs. If he can do that, he'll be back. But we're now at May 2021, and we still haven't seen him yet. So the thing to look for is to see if we can get Davey Martinez to tell us if he's going to start moving out of West Palm Beach and start going to rehab games. That's the only thing that we can hope for here in the next couple of weeks. But it's all about what he feels in that knee, because obviously, as you said, being a glue hitter, a consistent hitter, that changes the entire lineup when you have a guy like that that consistently gets on, similar to what Howie Kendrick was doing for this team early.
Now, one of the other strengths of this team is supposed to be the back end, the bullpen, and now Ryan Madsen is out. How long will he be out?
Well, the good news is that it was retroactive to May 17th. He hasn't pitched since May 13th, so they're hoping that this will just be a time for him to kind of calm down. I guess he's got a muscle strain in his chest area. Fortunately, it's not the arm or anything like that. But, you know, he is up in age as well. He has had a lot of work here in the first few months of the season, and they're hoping to get him back in the next week or so. More precautionary, I believe, for him. But the fact that he hasn't pitched even in a game since May 13th is what concerns them, and that he has not been comfortable enough to go out there. So he has been placed on the DL with that chest strain, and they're hopeful to get him back. And you bring up a good point, because is Davey Martinez relying on the big three at the back of the order of the bullpen more than he is these middle guys? And will that start to wear down these guys when we get into August and September? Worried about Sammy Solis, because they seem to be using him a lot more. He's had some injury history recently. He told me that he's as strong as he's ever been, but I don't like to see him being used over and over and over if they don't have the confidence in Wander Suero and Carlos Torres and others. Now, Matt Grace could be back very soon, could be back today. It would be nice to get somebody who has had some success and some experience in here, because, you know, obviously, if Davey doesn't have confidence in these younger guys, the back end of the bullpen is going to start to tire out.
All right, Byron. Appreciate the insight. It's
Thank
Byron.
You, buddy.
You can watch him on Masson.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great week, guys.
All right,
thank you, BK.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to head out to Kettler Iceplex. Tarik El-Bashir covers the Caps. for NBC Sports Washington will join us. We'll preview Game 6 with him next on The Junkies.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.